Good morning. Hi, I'm Dominic. Good to see you. Hope you are well this morning. Today we are continuing our series that we've been looking at this summer called Revive, and we're looking at different practices that we believe would help grow and grow you in a spiritual way as well. These aren't exclusive, like only these particular ones. We've picked out several. There are others as well. This morning we're going to continue by talking about the practice of community. Now, there's a problem with community, and the chances are you've experienced the problem this week. You might even be experiencing the problem right now. As I think about the community, I think of the problem about community is people. Nothing personal to you, any of you specifically, but you know what that's like. We've all had moments where it's like, I really would love to be with so-and-so, but they drive me a little nuts. Or maybe you've got really good friends that you've spent your life with and you would give up anything to give time with, but there are moments when they just push you a little too far. I mean, think about it. In a few months, we're going to be getting ready for Thanksgiving, believe it or not. It's almost the fall. And you're going to have these images of, like, you know, perfectly behaved children and in-laws all together in solemn quiet and peace over this meal. And the reality is, the next day, you're going to be absolutely worn out from a lot of the relational dynamics. Or think about work. You're part of a new team. You're around new people. You think, this is exciting. I'm going to get to build some new contacts, get to work with some new people. And after a couple days, you're thinking, I couldn't imagine anyone more difficult to work with than that person. Or maybe if you're married, you can look back to your wedding day and you had this moment of joy on your wedding day where you're like, I can't believe I got to marry you. And then a year in, you're like, I can't believe I married you. I didn't say that. Maybe you did, and I'll pray for you if that's the case. But we all know what it's like to be around people. We long to be in community. We long to be with people, but we're not really sure how to deal with people. People are messy. People don't operate, think, act like you want them to. People also have the capacity to hurt you. In fact, you have stories of people that have hurt you, and you have stories of people that you have hurt. We're complicated beings. Relationships are not clean. They're really messy, and they take a lot of work and effort. Yet there's something in us that longs to be known and to belong. So what if there was something you could do? What if there was something I could do? What if there's something we could do together as a group of people that could begin to change the narrative around community? That's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to look at a passage from the letter of Hebrews. We don't know who wrote Hebrews. Could be a couple different guys. Could be a woman who was a leader of the church back in that day. We don't know who wrote this letter, but this letter was written to a collection of people who were trying to figure out community. They believed that Jesus had done something for them and in the world, and they believed that community was somehow part of that story. And what we're going to see in this is that the writer explained to them and them around this idea that because what Jesus had done for them, that Jesus had done something for them, that community is a place where you are for someone else. And the writer's going to give them a charge and give them actually an action that they can do in the midst of other people that can maybe build a new type of community. So we're going to be in Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 through 25. The words will be on the screen above me, and let's dive in. Verses 24 through 25, actually verses 19 through 25 are all one big sentence in the original language of the Greek. And again, the writer's drawing this argument that Jesus has done something that's changed how people live and relate to God. And because of that, the writer gives kind of three let us statements. So in other words, there's three actions the writer wants these people, his audience, or her audience to do because of what Jesus has done. Verse 22, let us draw near with confidence. Verse 23, let us hold unswervingly to hope. And here now in our passage this morning is the third let us statement, and it goes like this. Let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Now, this word spur in the original Greek language is the word from which we get the English word provocation. It's a word that can have a negative meaning. You can imagine a conflict. In fact, there's a passage in Acts chapter 15, where the Apostle Paul and Barnabas get in this huge fight around different leadership principles and values, and the word used for that conflict is this same idea. So the word spur can have this negative connotation, but it can also have a positive connotation, like it's used here. It can mean something like to inspire someone, to inspire someone. And that's what the writer is doing here. Inspire them, call people, spur one another on towards something, toward love and good deeds. In other words, to a new way of living and operating in the world. Put it another way, be the means by which someone would live in a better way. Think about this. To inspire means that you are for someone else, that your agenda is their good, that you want them to see or experience something new that they haven't experienced before. Think about examples like in movies. Movies do this really well. In fact, the movies that we all watch, they usually have scenes around of inspiration in them. I recently rewatched Dead Poets Society, which is a complicated story, but at the heart of it is a teacher, Robin Williams, who wants his students to see the world from a new perspective. Remember, it ends with this famous scene, them standing on their desks, "Oh, Captain, my Captain." Maybe you remember Braveheart and its famous scene of Mel Gibson riding around on horseback. "They may take our lives, but never, take our," whatever that line is, you know what I'm saying. It's so inspirational, obviously, it moved me. But we have scenes, movies do this really well, books do this really well. We gravitate towards that because I think that's something we all want. We want someone to come along and show us that things can be different than they currently are. That's what the writer says here, spur people on. That the task is to show people a new way. In fact, with this in mind or with this in view, I would almost describe or define community this way. Now, community is a gathering of people whose purpose is for the good of one another. That community is a gathering of people who are for the good of one another, to inspire, to call people forward to something new. But here's where the passage turns, and this is kind of the heartbeat of it this morning, is that is what comes next. The writer says that the interesting thing is that this can't happen alone. That this can't happen if you keep people at a distance. This type of experience only happens in community. Watch what it says next in verse 25. The writer says, "Let us spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day approaching." Now, in the ancient world, meeting together was something that the followers of Jesus did from the very beginning. We have records both from the Bible and outside of the Bible that the followers of Jesus has met regularly. It's part of what they did from the very beginning. But this writer and this particular audience, some situations arose that they stopped meeting together. We don't know why. Maybe some said, this isn't for me. I'm not part of this anymore. Maybe some came, and a lot of this audience we think came from a Jewish background. So maybe they said, you know what? I kind of like my history and family I came with, so I'm just going to go back to that. There was also a lot of persecution going on from Rome in this particular time period. So maybe some thought, if we meet together, it's going to be a bit of a threat out there. So we're just going to stop meeting. Whatever the reason, whatever the cause of their lack of meeting, they had developed habits of keeping each other at a distance. It's specifically, they missed gathering as a church, as a community centered around what Jesus said and did. Now, I read a passage like this, and maybe you do, and you think of kind of our current context around church and everything that word and whatever baggage that may mean for you, whatever history that may bring along. And I think it is important to say something about kind of church and church attendance today, but before I say what I want to say about that, I want to tell you a bit of my background so you know kind of where I'm coming from on this topic. Growing up, my dad's been in ministry longer than I've been alive. And so growing up, we would go to church twice a week. It didn't matter if you were sick. It didn't matter if you could barely get out of bed. The car would run, and we'd just wait for you to leave the house until you get down. We're going to church. But my parents were also, at the same time, intentional not to burn us out, which I appreciate today. as I became adult, I discovered something interesting is that I had to make a choice of faith for myself. Maybe you can relate to experience like that, whether going from childhood to adulthood or maybe something later in life where you made your own choice. And so I discovered some church communities that were absolutely life-giving, that shape even today how I think and operate in the world. I also discovered some church communities that didn't do that, and everything in between. But what was interesting was this movement from childhood to adulthood was this place from where church attendance was decided for me, for my parents, to a place where I was making a choice on my own and owning that choice. I mean, think about it today. We all made a choice. Each of you made a choice, believe it or not, today. You made a choice to set an alarm. You made a choice to come in here today. For some of us, that was a very easy choice. It was an easy choice for me today to be here, and probably would have been a little awkward if I weren't. You'd still be waiting after that video to figure out who's going to come out next. For some of you, this is home, and you couldn't imagine anywhere else, and I love that. I hope you experience that, and I hope you get a sense of that. But also recognize that for some of us, this was a more difficult choice today. This maybe wasn't your first idea of how you wanted to spend 10 to 11:15 on a Sunday morning. But here's the thing. I think something powerful happens in this. And I get that. I get that because I've been in that place. I've been in both places where this was an easy choice and a difficult choice. But I think there's something powerful for us in gathering together. I think part of what I think believe the church should gather, I think that's part of what this passage teaches. But the writer's reason isn't because that we would all get some perfect attendance certificate. It isn't because of some perceived social pressure. For the writer's reason of why they should not stop meeting together, the writer's reason I think that would if he or she would say to us today is that the reason to keep meeting together is that if you didn't, you'd miss out on this encouragement, as the writer puts it. Some had gotten the habit of not meeting together, but they stop doing that. Keep meeting together so you don't miss out on encouraging one another. In fact, there was something that the writer believed, this encouragement, this spurring on, this inspiration of calling people to something more, of calling each other to something better, the writer believed could only happen with other people. It's a really interesting approach. It's almost like an invitation. It's almost like, make a choice, the writer's saying. Make a choice to be a part of something that will be for your benefit and that you can be for the benefit of someone else. It's almost as if the writer is saying, we need each other. We live in a culture that's pulling us into isolation. Don't miss out on the encouragement that could happen when you're together. Yeah, I think that writer could say that day. I think the writer could say that potentially about our day as well. And then the writer talks about a day. And the writer says, encourage one another. Keep meeting. Keep being together. Don't keep people at a distance. Push into community all the more as you see the day approaching. Now, this was kind of language. And obviously, the writer didn't need to define more of what this meant. This was a community that understood that there was a future coming. There was a day that the early followers of Jesus believed that Jesus would return to earth, that something new would get established in the heavens and the earth. But for our purposes today, I want you to think about this. What if the writer is saying that when you are in community, when you're spurring one another on, when you're inspiring the people around you to something more and to something better, you are doing something that's connected to God's future? Isn't that amazing? We sometimes kind of just put today into today, and we forget about anything in the future. Yeah, well, that just happens in the future. But what if what God's doing in the future somehow starts to creep into the present? What if they're not as disconnected as we tend to think that they might be? What if when you spur someone on this week, when you give them a picture of what could be more for them, of when you come alongside them and give them hope, what if you, when you do that, are bringing God's future, a taste of God's future into their presence? What if these things, the present and the future, aren't necessarily as disconnected as we imagine? And the writer says we can start to bring some of the future into the present through spurring one another on, through inspiring people, through being together for the good of one another. Jesus talked like this about community. Jesus had this fascinating picture about community that back in the Gospel of John, in John chapter 13, he told his closest followers, his disciples, he said, here's how the whole world is going to get to know that you are a follower of Jesus. Not because you adhere to a certain political view. It's not because you adhere to a certain set of beliefs. The way they're going to hear it most clearly anywhere else is that they're going to hear it by the way that you interact with one another. It says, by your love for one another. Now, if love just seems like such a bizarre general word for you, here's a definition of love that may find helpful. Love is whatever you labor and strive. It's your labor and your efforts for the good of another person. That's love. Love is your effort and your laboring, your work, your sacrifice so that someone else can be benefited. It's almost as if Jesus believed for his followers, he's like, you know what's going to change the world? A new type of community where people are acting in new ways that they've never acted before. Now, I know what you're thinking, like, hang on, does Jesus just mean like the followers of Jesus are going to be like less annoying than everyone else in our world? Does he mean they're going to pester us less? Does it mean that they're going to get on our nerves less? No. I think you know that. I think you're around people that they just drive you nuts. What Jesus is saying is that the people who follow him start to make a new kind of choice. They say, you know what? I'm going to be the type of person that lives in community to love, in other words, to labor for the good of another person. You say, well, how can you do that? Why would anyone ever do something good for someone that annoys them, for someone that's against them? And Jesus had an answer for that, and the followers of Jesus had an answer for that, and they just put it under this beautiful word called grace. They say, oh, that's grace. Oh, you mean doing something for someone who doesn't deserve it? That's grace. Oh, yeah, and that's what Jesus is about. See, Jesus is setting up a whole new kind of community. He's saying this is the type of thing that could change the world. It's that people who are not just out for their own agenda, people not just out to say their own piece in a conversation, that they're out for someone else. How can I help you? How can I be a benefit for you? That they're listening, they're acting in ways that would build each other up. He says that potentially, being sarcastic here, it could change the world. And yes, it's weird, and yes, people aren't going to be less annoying and pester you, and they're not going to get on your nerves, you're not going to have conflicts. It's none of that. This means that in that, you make a choice of grace. That's what Jesus did for us, for each of us. The biblical writers talk about Jesus dying on a cross, and they said, here's the thing about that. That happened 2,000 years ago. I'm not 2,000 years old. I don't think any of us in this room are 2,000 years old. I've had some old relatives, but they didn't make it that far. So what Jesus did happened long before you showed up. And the biblical writers say, that is grace. That someone would do something before you even had the thought that potentially you deserved it. That's grace. That's how Jesus acted towards you and towards me. He died and offered a way that we could live new and be fully alive. I love kind of how Brandon led us through that, this darkness and light themes today, and at the center in that middle song that Liz sang about Jesus, that he connects those two. He brings people out of darkness into new life, into light. That's what Jesus did. He did it not because we deserved it, not because we figured it out. And if you weren't sure, it happened long before you even showed up on earth. So you can't even make that argument that somehow God was for you even before you were worthy enough, even if you thought you are, to be for. God was for you. That's grace. And Jesus says, that's the way. That's the way that potentially could change the world. A gathering of people who are for one another. A gathering of people centered around grace. So, what can we do with this? What are some ways that we can act? Here are two ideas. One is to listen to learn, and two is to act to build up. Listen to learn and act to build up. What are ways that you could inspire someone? What's a way that you could spur someone on, that you could participate in this type of community and this type of gathering with other people? Listen to learn and act to build up. First, listen to learn. As you talk with people, here's an idea. As you talk to people, people are going to open windows to their story. Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever asked someone a question and they like give you all this information? You're like, okay, thanks. I didn't really want all that. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to bring you into their story. If you're like me, sometimes, you know, things, life gets busy or rushing out. It's like maybe your kids are pulling on you, whatever. And you're just like, yeah, okay, that's great. I got to go. And what if there are moments, though, that we just stopped and go, oh, hold on a second. Wait. Oh, you said something interesting. Wait, why'd you make that decision? Oh, wait, that was part of your history? Oh, why was that? And let them tell part of their story. It's amazing what we can learn from each other. Listen for repeated phrases or places or events or things that just seem out of the ordinary that all of us kind of throw into part of our telling of our story that we want to tell more. We want to be a part of that. We want someone to hear. Even if we don't realize it in the moment. Ask questions. Be a posture of being interested. We know that interested people are interesting people. Some of you are very good at this. You ask a ton of questions. You want the best way to influence, the best way to be connected with another person is be interested in their life. It's amazing what they'll tell you because you know what? We're longing for this. No matter what you believe today, you could probably get the sense as a culture that we're longing for some sort of connection, to be known, to belong, to be a part of something, for someone to know us. But there are not a lot of spaces. What if you created that space where someone else felt like they belonged and they were known to you? Listen to learn. Second thing you could do is you can find ways to act to build them up. What if there were ways that as you're listening, someone tells you a need in their life, and it could be a small need, and you just walk away going, wait, I actually could do something about that, and you kind of quietly come around, and maybe you meet that need. Maybe it's a gift, and someone tells you something that they really enjoy, and you're like, oh, that's really nice, and you walk away, and it's like, you know what? I think I'm going to get them that. And you just find ways to build them up. Doesn't need a reason. You're like, well, do they deserve it or not? No, that's where grace comes in. You just find a way, like, hey, I just wanted to let you know that I'm for you. And maybe you don't even tell them, you just do it. Just find ways. People will tell you, they'll open their stories to you. Sometimes we think the best thing we can do or give in a conversation is our advice. And there are times for that, certainly. But what if there's more? What if there's more that you could do? It could even be a small thing that could help create a sense of belonging, that could spur someone on, that could inspire them, that could give them hope, that today could be better than tomorrow. Henry David Thoreau said this. He said, the greatest compliment that was ever paid me was when one asked me what I thought and attended to my answer. I love that. The greatest compliment that was ever paid me was when one asked what I thought and attended to my answer. There's a listening to learn, and there's finding a way to act and to build up someone else. That's something all of us could do. Each of us could be a part of. Now, you may be wondering, why does this matter? Well, here, I have a theory, and it's just my theory, and you can throw it out if you don't like my theory, but here it goes. My theory is there is not a person on this planet, there's no person in any culture, any country, anyone you will ever encounter who doesn't need to be encouraged. There isn't anyone on this planet who doesn't need hope, who doesn't want to see something more about their life. You're never going to meet someone who's over-encouraged. You're never going to ask someone, like, when we get done here in a few minutes, you're not going to go, like, oh, how are you today? And someone's going to go, gosh, you know, I'm just exhausted from all the encouragement I received this morning. My kids just woke up telling me how great of a parent I am and how valuable I've been to their life. And my spouse, I mean, just couldn't stop talking about me. My boss just keeps showering me with praise and promotions. And it's exhausting. How are you? Not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You can do this, and you can be confident it will help someone. You can be confident it's going to inspire them. Okay, one last thing. Maybe you're listening to this, and you're like, okay, I hear that, and I'm on board with that, and I'm ready to go do that, but at the same time, there's something in you that goes, But does he know that the person who needs that is me? I mean, maybe you're listening to this today and you realize, that's great. I hope people will go do that, and I hope someone does that with me, because that's where I am. I need someone to come near to me. I need community. I need someone around me who's going to listen to learn and act to build me up, who's going to point me and give me hope that there's something better tomorrow than today, to center me around what Jesus has done and what he continues to do. Maybe that person is you. And if that person is you, here's what I think the writer of Hebrews would say to you. I think the writer of Hebrews would say, take a risk. Or as other biblical writers call it, take a step of faith. And make the choice for community. Find someone to listen, who will listen to you. Someone to be around. When you don't feel like being around people, maybe that's when you most need to do it. That's risky. That's challenging. Trust me, I've been there. It's not always easy. But maybe it's in the very thing that you fear that you'll find healing. Jesus told probably one of his most famous parables in Luke chapter 15 about a father and two sons, oftentimes called this parable the prodigal son. And it's a multi-layered story full of political and religious ramifications of Jesus' day and misconceptions about God and all this stuff. But at the end of the story is a scene. And in the scene, the older son, the older of the two, has this moment where he explains to his father that he's felt betrayed, excluded, hurt by the actions of his father. And there's kind of this tension-filled standoff moment. And then the father says, I think, one of the most profound statements in the entire Bible. In fact, if you want to ever memorize a passage of scripture, just memorize this statement. The father, who as we learn through the story, Jesus says is an image of God our Father. The father says to this son, who feels outcast and on the outside, he says, you have always been with me, and everything I have is yours. You have always been with me, and everything I have is yours. Do you hear that? Jesus saying, here's what God is like. The people on the outside, God doesn't throw ideas at them. He doesn't throw like all this stuff and just say, okay, just stay away from me. I don't want to be a part. What God does is he moves towards people. God moves towards people in community, people who are hurting, people who feel like, God, you've put me aside. And here's God's answer. All right, I'll come to you. Everything I am is available to you. God's answer is community. God's answer to you and offer to you is community with him. What if we lived in ways that did the same? Can you imagine what that would do? Can you imagine what that would do to our campus? Can you imagine what that would do to your workplace, to your neighborhood, to your family, if everybody was for each other and worked for the good of one another? That's what could happen in community, and that's what God does for us. We're going to close with a song and a few words. Kevin's going to bring us at the end with a benediction, but I want to now transition and pray for us and pray for our journey in community with people, that we would be people who spur one another on, that help each other to see something more. And if you're the person who's like, that's me, I need that today, maybe it starts by knowing that your Heavenly Father is moving toward you. You're not alone. You're not alone. There's something more. There's a God with everything available to him coming to you. Let's pray. God, thanks for the gift of community and showing us that healing's possible there. Thanks for showing us a new way forward, that that hope is possible when things seem lost, inspiration, the spurring one another on, is part of this deal that you've called us to as community. Pray for those of us who call this church community home, that we would be people who would live this out, that we would continue to do that as we do each week here. Thank you for a community, for those of us who called this church home, for community centered around Jesus. And we truly do believe that you're a living hope. And for those of us, God, in this room who maybe kind of are all across the spectrum on this, or maybe doubting or wondering, would you just remind us that you're a God who moves towards us? As much as we try to figure out the game and figure out the right words, the right clue to turn over, your response is to walk toward us. That you've always been with us, and everything that is yours is available to us. But that set us free, knowing that we're in community with you. Thank you for uniting people around Jesus, uniting us as family, as sons and daughters of a living God who's for us and calling us to be for one another.